listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
So there I was in church one day last December, late afternoon, I'd say, and the church was mostly empty except for up on the stage was the church choir. There might have been about 50 people in the church choir, and they were practicing the Christmas program that they were going to sing later on that day. And like I said, the church was mostly empty except for me and a couple other spouses watching. I'm not in the choir, by the way, and that's a good decision on everybody's part. But I got this text from my wife, who's in the choir. She was on the second row, and it said, "Hey, I forgot my songbook in the car. Can you go back out to the car, get my songbook, and bring it back here?" So I said, "Okay, no problem." Went out to the car, got the songbook, came back, and I climbed up on the stage to give this to my wife just as the choir had finished a song. And the choir director looked at me, and I was about to deliver this songbook, and it just came out. I said, "Candygram for Mongo." And almost immediately, some guy in the back row, one of the bass singers, says, "Mongo like candy." I mean, just like that. And the choir director looked at me and then into the back of the choir with a really strange, you know, confused expression on his face. And I just want to say that that's kind of typical of this great movie, Blazing Saddles. It's a great comedy, and there are a lot of things that can be quoted from this movie. It's almost as quotable as like maybe Caddyshack or Princess Bride or something. It's a great comedy movie. I'd say it's one of the top five comedy movies out there. It's not my favorite, but I think Lady Eve is my favorite comedy movie, but it's up there with The Airplane and so forth. It's a great movie. And I'd say I've watched it maybe 30 times. The guy in the back row, whoever said "Mongo like candy," I never found out who that guy was. It's not like he came up to me and said, "Hey, wasn't that funny when you said that, you know," and then I answered. And no, I never even found out who that guy was. And I don't want to sound like Michelle Obama, but that was one of the moments that I really felt really proud of my church, that I could come out with a Blazing Saddles quote and just immediately somebody could follow it up with another Blazing Saddles quote. So anyway, welcome everybody to another episode of the Survival in Motion podcast. This is author Cal Wilson. In today's episode, I'm going to go over the movie Blazing Saddles, and I'm going to be discussing the prepping issues that were presented in that movie, Blazing Saddles. Now, of course, Blazing Saddles had the focus and its purpose was to make people watch it and laugh, and it did that very well. But it did, in the process, present several prepping issues that I'd like to discuss here today. This is not necessarily going to be a funny Survival in Motion podcast episode, but I think it's going to be informative. I think, believe it or not, these are serious prepping issues. So it's not necessarily going to be funny, but I think these are important issues to discuss. Let me just say before I get going that Blazing Saddles could not be made today. It's a very politically incorrect movie for several reasons, mostly because of the racial angle of this movie. The N-word gets tossed around just all over the place, especially at the beginning of the movie. Jokes are made among the racists, and they laugh at each other's jokes. And no, that couldn't be made today. But I think the main reason why the racial element of this movie would be so objectionable to today's people is that the movie started off with a bunch of real racist people in this town of Rock Ridge. And by the end of the movie, everybody learned to get along. And the black sheriff who had been appointed to Rock Ridge, as the movie went on, that guy became accepted to the people of Rock Ridge. And so much so that at the end of the movie, the people of Rock Ridge were about to hand out homesteads to these friends of the sheriff. These were African-American railroad workers. So I think that is so objectionable today because when the subject of race or a person's skin color comes up nowadays, The end result is supposed to be that this is hopeless. We've got a horrible country. It was founded by racist slaveholders, and there's no hope in our country ever getting along. The only thing we can do is, I don't know, maybe start wholesale discriminating against other people instead of just everybody getting along. That's not what the crybabies of today want to see. They want to see racism presented and then ending on a down note, not on a constructive, positive note, which Blazing Saddles ended on. This movie also broke through the fourth wall, which is where characters will be talking to each other and somebody will turn to the camera and say something directly into the audience. At one point, the Harvey Korman character is talking to himself and scheming to himself, and then he turns to the camera and says, "Why am I asking you?" That kind of thing. And then by the end of the movie, there's a big fight scene, and it goes from one part of the Warner Brothers lot at Burbank to another, to the canteen, and then on and on. And finally, Harvey Korman hails a cab and says, "Get me off of this picture." And then several of the characters wind up in the Chinese theater in L.A. there, watching the movie that they're in. I mean, that's really smashing through the so-called fourth wall. So anyway, before I get started, I want to say one other thing, and that is that this movie is a great Mel Brooks movie, but it was also written by a couple of other great comedic authors, Andrew Bergman, who is a real powerhouse with comedy writing and movies. He also wrote the movie The In-Laws, which is another probably top 10, one of the best comedy movies out there. And also Richard Pryor, who spent 99% of his Hollywood career in front of the camera, not behind it. And there were a couple of other writers as well. But this was the product of a writing powerhouse. So it's not surprising in that respect that this is such a great comedy movie. Anyway, like I said, this episode is not going to be so much funny as it's going to be referring to the prepper issues that were brought up in the movie Blazing Saddles. So let me just say one last thing. As a Christian, there are some parts of this movie that I don't like, I find uncomfortable, but I don't find it blasphemous because I think the movie itself is a parody of Western movies, and that includes the character of the local church minister or pastor. I don't like hearing his joking prayers. I don't like seeing the Bible getting shot, but I don't think it's meant to be blasphemous. I think it's meant to be humorous, even though it's one of those moments that Christians kind of think, I could do without that. But otherwise, I think it's a great movie. And let's get on to this episode where I discuss prepper issues that are brought up in the movie Blazing Saddles. Yeah, that's Count Basie and his orchestra tickling the ivories there in the middle of the desert, which you'll probably never see in any other movie besides Blazing Saddles. Anyway, one of the issues I wanted to bring up, I don't think it'll take too much time here, is the portrayal of government officials in the movie Blazing Saddles. And this Governor LePetitmaine and his right-hand man, the Attorney General, Hedy Lamarr, that's Hedley, they spend their entire existence in this movie manipulating the power of their government to enrich themselves somehow, whether it's sex or money or land they're ripping off from the local Indians or the railroad. And I understand from history that railroads, when they were being laid between the Civil War and the turn of the century, that was a pretty ruthless group of wealthy, wealthy people intertwined with government officials. So this governor, who it was played by Mel Brooks, and I don't think he was seen once in the movie without his eyes crossed. He was portraying government officials as completely and totally corrupt, no matter what they say, and looking to enrich themselves any way, shape, or form at the expense of people they supposedly serve. And by the way, LePetitmaine, have you ever wondered how Mel Brooks got that name for that governor in Blazing Saddles? Why did he name that governor LePetitmaine? I looked it up. According to Wikipedia, Le Petitmain was the stage name of a French flatulist, which is a professional farter, and entertainer named Joseph Pujol, who lived from 1857 to 1945. He was famous for the remarkable control he had of his abdominal muscles, which enabled him to seemingly fart at will. His stage name combines the French term péter, which means to fart, and the word mane, which stands for maniac, which translates means fartomaniac. The profession is also referred to as flatulist. Well, that's interesting factoid there. If that ever comes up in a trivia contest, I'll know. I'll get that answer right. This guy, Pujol, was born in Marseille, one of five children to a Catalan family. Soon after he left school, he had a strange experience while swimming. He pulled his head under the water and held his breath, and he felt an icy cold permeating his rear end. He ran ashore in fright and was amazed to sense water coming out of his rear end. While serving in the army, he told his fellow soldiers about his special ability and repeated it for their amusement. He had a stage act that went on to the Moulin Rouge, and he was able to sing O Solo Mio and Le Marseille from his rear end. Anyway, I wanted to say this. This governor is totally corrupt, and his attorney general was totally corrupt as well. So why am I mentioning this in a prepper podcast? Well, it's something to keep in mind. Whenever you have any dealings with government officials, and I'm not talking about just presidents or governors or attorney generals, I'm talking about anybody in government. Not all, but a lot of them are completely self-centered, corrupt, or incompetent, and you need to behave accordingly and keep your guard up because you're dealing with people who will say what they want to say to convince you that they are doing what they're doing for altruistic reasons. But in reality, a lot of these people are totally corrupt. And as an example of what I'm talking about, just keep this in mind, that there are too many examples to mention, but anybody who is elected to the Senate or to the House of Representatives, if they are a middle income, or I should say middle class net worth, within only a few years, these people become amazingly wealthy just by virtue of the fact that they are in elective office. So keep that in mind. In fact, I have a prediction. These four idiots who were recently elected to Congress, they're not known for much aside from being loudmouths and idiots. My prediction is this: within a few years, we'll be able to look up these four people and they will be amazingly wealthy. So keep that in mind when it comes to dealing with anybody associated with the government. Not everybody, but a lot of people in the government are totally, completely corrupt. And this governor, like I said, whose name is Le Petitmain, played by Mel Brooks, he spent the entire movie of Blazing Saddles doing what he could to enrich himself. And I think it's fitting that this guy was named Le Petitmain. You know, come to think of it, a major theme in this movie, Blazing Saddles, is flatulence, which I'll talk more about later. But keep that in mind. The point I wanted to make here is that government officials, again, not all of them, but a lot of them are totally corrupt and or incompetent. So keep that in mind when you have to deal with these people. Even though I'm discussing prepper issues that are covered in the movie Blazing Saddles, in this installment, you'll see what I'm talking about. This is not really funny. Another issue that I think is relevant to talk about from Blazing Saddles is racism and, more broadly, discrimination, not only against Jews, but also conservatives and Christians, and how that is becoming more and more accepted today. Like I mentioned earlier, the movie Blazing Saddles began with a completely racist town called Rock Ridge, and this black sheriff who was appointed there, by the end of the movie, was accepted by the people in the town of Rock Ridge. Anyway, that's an issue that I just wanted to bring up here. And by the way, it's relevant for this podcast, Survival in Motion, because I named it Survival in Motion because it doesn't only cover, you know, the end of the world scenario. It covers minor stuff on up to the end of the world and everything in between. And this survival issue, I think, is relevant, is discrimination, which a lot of people listening to this podcast will know what I'm talking about. You're going to be feeling the effects of discrimination, probably, if you are Caucasian, if you're Christian, if you're conservative, if you're a Jew. It's becoming acceptable today in the United States to discriminate against conservatives, against Caucasians, Jews, and so forth. Here's a list I came up with as examples of how you might feel discriminated against. If you're not hired to a job, especially if the job is a government job, and I'm talking specifically about teachers, policemen, firemen, EMTs. If you are hired at a job, but you're not promoted and you see others all around you getting promoted faster than you. If you're not accepted into a college or to a university. And that brings up an example of the gun rights student from Florida. Remember that Florida high school that was shot up a little over a year ago? One of those students came out and reaffirmed that he was an advocate of gun rights. And he got into some college, and I can't remember which one, but he apparently was making too much of a name for himself as a gun rights advocate. So his acceptance was canceled. And also contrast that with the student, I think his name was Hogg, he came out a very strong gun control advocate, and he famously applied to several different colleges and got rejected. And then he became such a well-known gun control advocate that he actually got accepted into Harvard for college. So keep that in mind, that discrimination has a way of influencing whether you get into a college or a university. Here's another example, getting accepted to college but denied a scholarship. Here's another example is lower grades on essay tests in college. If the student writes about a conservative opinion, and I'd like to refer you to my last podcast at Survival in Motion entitled Surviving College. A lot of that podcast has to do with what are you going to do if you're a conservative and you're in a liberal college class taught by a liberal? How are you going to handle that essay test? Are you going to come out and show your true colors as a conservative? Or are you going to opt for the higher grade and just try to pass yourself off as a liberal? I'd invite you to listen to that last podcast episode I had called Surviving College. Here's another example. The city government will assign contracts to a more favored business. City contracts are a big deal. One example I'm aware of is the city of Los Angeles will not award city contracts to companies unless that company has ascertained, has verified that nobody in the company is a gun owner or a member of the NRA or whatever. Don't take my word 100% for the facts there, but I know that there's some kind of discrimination against gun owners in the awarding of city contracts in Los Angeles. It's another example of discrimination. Here's another example here. Rules and regulations that hurt your business. I'm referring here to what came to light after the 2012 presidential election, in which not only the IRS, but a whole bunch of different government agencies completely harassed any conservative out there. If you're interested in looking further into this, not only the IRS, and that woman, Lois Lerner, just admitted it, but there were a number of government agencies that really harassed some private individuals and some private companies only because they were associated with Mitt Romney and his campaign or Republicans and so forth. True, the vote is one of them, but there are many of them. Here's another example. Lack of police protection where it might be needed. And I'm talking not only about college campuses where there's a conservative invited to show up and speak, but also in Portland and other cities, but mostly Portland and Berkeley with Antifa, the ironically named anti-fascist group, which is really fascist. It's the modern day brown shirts. The police have been told famously to back off while Antifa beats up people. Anybody who raises a peep of objection to Antifa, they get beat up, and the cops are standing within eyesight, but they're not doing anything. Trump had a rally in San Jose in 2016, and the San Jose police were told to stand back and let these Trump supporters get beat up as they left the rally. That's another example of discrimination, and it's becoming acceptable today. There's something else I wanted to touch on called the knockout game. I've only read about teenage African Americans looking for white people, say, in their 40s and 50s who look relatively defenseless. The reason why they call it a game is because the person doing the attacking tries to surprise the victim and get one big right hook across the head and tries to knock out the person. That's called the knockout game. Speaking of anti-Semitism, synagogue shootings, there haven't been many, but there are enough. What these people read in the internet, and they're obviously anti-Semitic. There was that shooting outside that baseball diamond a couple summers ago. You know, they read these internet blog posts and websites, and they just whip up the hysterical hatred of conservatives and white people, whatever. Anyway, that's what happened a couple summers ago when that guy went out, tried to kill off a lot of Republican congressmen at that baseball practice. I've noticed that there is, it's kind of a Mao type crowd harassment. And that includes shaming for not agreeing with accepted social causes. There's a professor named Professor Weinstein at Evergreen State. He left, even though he was a liberal. He just wasn't liberal enough. And if you're wondering how Mao Zedong worked his evil in communist China, just check out Evergreen State. Here's another example of discrimination that is becoming acceptable, is censorship and demonetizing by just about all internet gatekeeping companies. And I'm talking Twitter, Facebook, Google, YouTube. Either they will delete what you're saying, they will close your account and keep you silent, or they will demonetize you. And that's what happened to Steven Crowder. He had the YouTube channel called Louder with Crowder, and he was a very creative, off-the-wall, conservative commentator on his YouTube channel, and he was demonetized, so he's no longer able to earn a living by cranking out his very creative and enjoyable YouTube videos. Okay, here's what I wanted to conclude with. If you think that the wedding cake bakers who are sued, you know, by gays trying to force them to make a wedding cake, the harassment facing those people, that's just the tip of the spear. And the reason why it's important to watch what happens to those people is because the discrimination that they are facing, these Christian wedding cake bakers, the discrimination that they are facing could someday expand to the rest of society. And pretty soon, government license needed for your job? Well, you're going to have to swear out a loyalty oath to advocate something that you disagree with. So I'm reading these lists of acceptable discrimination examples, and I'm also bringing this subject up on a survivalist podcast to just bring this to your attention. And it's your call, obviously, what you want to do about it, but it's something you need to be aware of. And there are different approaches to getting around it. Do you want to take it on head on and say, damn the torpedoes, I'm going ahead and admitting I'm a conservative or whatever? Well, that is one approach that a lot of people do. I don't think that's the smartest thing in all cases. Like I said, in that podcast I had last month, Surviving College, you can always just lay low and people don't need to know your political opinions, and you will be left alone, or in the case of colleges and universities, you can go ahead and get that straight A on that essay test. But anyway, it's relevant to a prepper podcast that discrimination is now becoming more and more acceptable in the United States, and it's something to be aware of. Okay, like I mentioned earlier, a major theme in the movie Blazing Saddles is flatulence. And there's no way you can talk about the movie Blazing Saddles without any reference at all to that famous scene of all these cowboys around the campfire eating beans. And there's just a firestorm of flatulence there. I don't remember any other movies up until that time where that subject was broached. I vaguely remember there was a Pink Panther movie where the Pink Panther character was in an elevator and squeezed one off and broke a little wind. And you see the facial expressions of the other people in the elevator just kind of grimacing. And anyway, that's a major part of that movie. I remember as a little kid when I saw that scene, I was just howling with laughter. Howling. I was rolling on the ground. And I think a lot of kids had the same reaction. And then I got into like junior high and high school, and I thought, well, potty humor is beneath me. It's not really that funny. And then got into college and graduate school. And then I thought, well, I guess it's not so much funny. It's gastrointestinal. Potty humor is not that great. But now I think it's funny because the makers of the movie apparently thought it was funny, and so they dove right in and had that campfire scene. But let me move on from there. This flatulence scene in the movie Blazing Saddles brings to mind prepper issues, specifically gastrointestinal issues. And I'm talking about storing stuff, whether it's just for a grid down situation or the end of the world or whatever. Let's see, it's a good idea to store dried pinto beans. They're relatively cheap, and for the calories you can ingest by eating properly cooked beans, it's a pretty good bang for the buck. No pun intended there. And same for rice. If you have white rice that does not have any kind of oil or liquid in it, and make sure it's dried and store it, both of these, beans and rice, separately or even together, along with an oxygen absorber in a 5-gallon bucket, or I did this in my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping. I took those 2-liter soda bottles that you buy in Walmart. When you finish drinking the Diet Coke out of them, clean them out, make sure they're dry, and then you can store rice and beans in there, and along with some kind of seasoning, and then put a few oxygen absorbers and store all this in a dry, cool, dark place. They have different shelf lives. Dried beans supposedly last as long as, say, 3 to 5 years. Dried rice will last as long as 25 years. Of course, all this depends on whether it's totally vacuum sealed. If you can get rid of all the oxygen, ideally, if you vacuum seal it, it will last a lot longer. And if you store it in a cool, dark, dry place, it will last even longer. As far as cooking beans, there's no other way. You just have to sort through them, make sure you get rid of the rocks and any dirt, rinse it first, and then soak it in boiling water for several hours. For rice, you soak that in water as well. The rice and beans together is a good, inexpensive, but high-calorie intake, and that's something you need to store up for and prepare for. Another thing I wanted to mention, bringing to mind from this campfire scene, is that if we're talking about a grid down issue of more than 1 to 2 weeks, then I think just the whole countryside, whole city's worth, a lot of people are going to have some very serious stomach problems, starting with diarrhea, but constipation could be there too. That's why I would recommend, and again, I talked about this well in both of my books, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping and also Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat, that right now, anti-diarrhea pills and fiber pills are all easily gotten for next to nothing. And it would be a great idea to store up a lot of these pills in a 5-gallon bucket or some kind of storage and bury it, you know, in a cash tube. And that's another previous podcast episode where I talked about cash tubes. Or store it anywhere where it's, like I said earlier, cool, dark, and dry. These pills will have a shelf life, but you can extend that shelf life by keeping it as oxygen-free as possible, as dry as possible, as dark and as cool as possible. Those are the ideal situations for storing this stuff. So it's a good idea now to stock up on this stuff while it's still inexpensive, so that if there is, God forbid, a long-term grid-down situation, that this stuff will be really, really important. I'm talking about Imodium AD. I'm talking about fiber pills in case there's constipation. And if you think it won't happen to you, think again. I'll never forget, there I was in Central America on a mission trip, and I was about to leave. Several of us went to a restaurant right next to the airport, and I made the dumb mistake of eating a salad. You know, that whole trip, I was not sick, but I had been eating piping hot soup and chili the whole week. And that's the best way to make sure that you're not eating bacteria that will cause problems with your system. Like I said, big mistake that I had some fresh salad right as I got onto the plane. And for the next day and a half, I had the worst case of diarrhea I've ever had. And it convinced me that, you know, diarrhea is not only just a major pain, but it's also a life-threatening thing. And if there is a grid down situation for 1, 2, 3 weeks or longer, that's going to be a lot of people who have run out of food, who are trying to eat other things that their system is not used to. And this will be extremely valuable and important in such a situation. Imodium AD, fiber pills. And as a related issue, in one of those books, I think it was Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping, I talked about my pastor who had gone on a mission trip to Cambodia, and he spent a whole week sweating like a pig and drinking water. And then when he got back to town, he thought he was okay. And then a couple of days later, he was walking around in the middle of the night talking gibberish and then passed out. And he woke up in a hospital bed and they had an IV hooked up to him. They were giving him electrolytes because water does not cut it when you're working hard and sweating. So you need to stock up on electrolyte recipes, not only Gatorade powder, but Squincher powder. And those two can be expensive, especially Gatorade. But there are other ingredients to electrolyte recipes as well. I'm talking about potassium, which is in the form of salt substitute that they sell nowadays. Also, just regular salt. Also add a pinch of baking soda and add some fruit juice to make it taste good and maybe some sugar content as well. If you're wondering about electrolyte and how to get your hands on some and you're in a country where there are coconuts, crack open one of the coconuts and drink coconut milk because that is one of the best electrolyte sources that nature has. Okay, and here's another issue I wanted to mention, and it's not directly related, but I'm going to say it anyway. If you or a friend of yours has asthma, acid reflux can cause an asthma attack. And so for that reason, it's also a good idea to store up on Pepcid because Pepcid will calm down your stomach. And if you're an asthmatic, that could be a life or death issue. One step further than that, if you do have an asthma attack, I was watching a movie a couple of years ago. I wish I could remember the name of the movie, but it was about a little kid who got kidnapped, and the kidnapper was calling the parents for ransom. And the kidnapper said, oh, and by the way, he's having an asthma attack. And the mother said, well, start brewing up some coffee and get him to drink as much coffee as he can. And I remember watching that on that movie, and I thought, is that for real? So I looked it up, and it's true. That if you have asthma problems, then that might be one thing. Obviously, you need to go to the hospital. But if a hospital is not available, then brew some coffee and start drinking that. And that brings to mind another Survival in Motion podcast episode. One of the earlier episodes is where I talk about stocking up on coffee and coffee mix. That is something I still do to this day. I have it in my suitcase anytime I'm traveling around and somebody says, oh, good morning, here's some coffee, and it tastes awful. Then I have one of these mixes that Starbucks sells, and I turn my back and discreetly pour it into their cup of coffee, and then all of a sudden, it's a good cup of coffee. So anyway, that's something good to stock up on in case somebody around you or you has an asthma attack. You can have coffee ready to drink, and that will help you in an asthma attack. Obviously, if you can't get to a doctor or hospital first, this is a backup plan. So that's another issue I wanted to bring up that was touched on by Blazing Saddles, and that is how you can prepare for gastrointestinal issues. Okay, now I've got my notes here. Excuse me while I whip this out. Of course, that's just another quote that you can use from the movie Blazing Saddles. Like I said, it's a number of good quotes in this movie. But let me talk about an issue, and I've debated having a whole separate podcast episode on this issue. And let me bring it up like this. The character played by Gene Wilder in Blazing Saddles, you know, he said that his name was Jim, but most people called him Jim. That guy had, at least at the beginning of the movie, had a serious alcohol problem. And like I said earlier, survival in motion is not all about the end of the world. It's about a lot less than that. Alcoholism is a serious survival issue. And I'm talking about the person who cannot get through a day without drinking some alcohol. I'm talking about a person who will get drunk at night and wake up the next day and feels that craving for alcohol. I'm talking about the person who always has alcohol nearby, not only in their house, but when they go to a restaurant, there's some alcohol there. They go to business meetings, there's this alcohol being handed out. If you have that craving for alcohol, I think it's time for you to fess up and admit it, that you have an alcohol addiction problem. Let me put it this way. When I was in high school and college, I could drink a lot of people under the table. But fortunately, I could wake up the next day. And of course, I'd feel hungover pretty bad and a pretty bad headache. But I could go weeks without having another drop or even thinking about it. I just did not have that craving for alcohol. And at the time, I totally took it for granted. I did not really appreciate it. But the more I've worked with people, the more I've seen other people in my profession who have alcohol issues, the more I really thank God that I don't have such a problem as alcoholism. Here's the main thing, is don't treat it like it's a character flaw, because it's not. It's a biological issue. It's a biological condition. Your body craves alcohol. That's it. It's not a character flaw to just realize that and act accordingly. And step one of the Alcoholics Anonymous 12-step program is acknowledging that you're an alcoholic. And that's a good thing to do, to recognize the problem. And from then on, I think all the other steps in the AA 12 steps are beside the point. I think that first step, once you get through that and you realize and acknowledge you have an alcohol problem, I think everything else from then on is downhill. It's a lot easier when you just admit it to yourself. And once you admit it, the name of the game is quit drinking right now. There's no tomorrow. Don't just say, okay, one more day or whatever. Right now. Cold turkey, not one more drop, right now. Get all the alcohol out of your house. Get it out of your office. Stay away from bars and liquor stores and wine tasting. Just stay away from it. If you're at a gathering where somebody hands you an alcoholic drink, you need to have a speech ready and tell them, look, it's fine for you. Have a great time. Apparently, it's not a problem for you, but it's a problem for me. And have that speech ready and be ready to go. And if that person doesn't listen to you and says, oh, come on, and they try a second time to give you that drink, you need to leave. Just leave. Don't even take a drop. Don't even hold it in your hand. If you have an alcohol problem and you have roommates and they have alcohol in their rooms or something, stay away. Just move out. Get away from it. People who have alcohol problems, it is possible to be a funny drunk. It's also possible to be an angry drunk. But the bottom line is, you don't become a fun person. You're not a fun-loving person. You're a drunk, and you need to accept this and act accordingly. There's a great movie, My Name is Bill W., I think it's called. It's about the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he started noticing that when he talked with other alcoholics and talked them through their cravings and convinced them to stay dry just one more day, he noticed it helped him. So that's why Alcoholics Anonymous are such great resources. If you have an alcohol problem, go to the internet, look up AA.org, and you input your zip code, and you can find out the location of an AA meeting place nearby you. It's okay. The first couple of meetings, just show up and just say, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. My name is whatever. State your name. and just say, hey, look, I'm just here to listen the first couple of times. They'll be okay with that. And then as you get further into it, as you get more experienced with the crowd there and what they're going through, then you can share some of what you're going through. And just like with that movie, My Name is Bill W., you'll notice that when you listen to other people and how they got through the day and resisted that drink, you'll notice that you'll be encouraging them. And when you encourage them, then you're also helping yourself. And it also helps if you get a sponsor. That's the person who will answer your call at 3 a.m. And an AA sponsor will talk you back. If you have a craving and you say, I'm about to blow it, I know this is bad news, I've got to have a drink, I'm going into that bar, and you think, well, let me just call up that AA sponsor. That's a good thing. And that AA sponsor will answer the call and talk you out of it. And they know this because they've been through those cravings that you're about to give in to. Here's another thing about alcoholism. You can never let down your guard. If you're clean and sober for 5 years, great. Great for you. Keep it up, but don't rest on your laurels. If you're clean and sober for 10, 20 years, that's great. Just remember, 20 years sober, and the next day you can go on a bender like a fish to water. So keep your guard up for the rest of your life if you have an alcohol problem. So I wanted to address that as another survival issue that came to light from that movie, Blazing Saddles, and that is alcohol addiction. And check out the show notes if you feel that this applies to you and you need help. There's a lot of help out there. Okay, I told you, and I proved it again, that this was not necessarily going to be a funny podcast, even though I'm referring to issues that were brought up in the movie Blazing Saddles. Let me tell you, Blazing Saddles, like I said, it's one of my favorite comedy movies. And I also said earlier that flatulence is a main theme of that movie, and it just occurred to me, why name it Blazing Saddles? A saddle is something you sit on with your rear end. What makes it blazing? Well, methane is flammable, or I don't know if they're talking about hemorrhoids that might be blazing. I mean, that is kind of an awkward name for a Western movie. But there you have it. It was written by Mel Brooks and Richard Pryor, Andrew Bergman. These are powerhouse screenwriters on comedy movies, so that kind of figures. It's a great movie. And it recently had its 45th anniversary. The way things are going, I know that the year 50 will come around, but it's so politically incorrect, I wouldn't be surprised if it's just never shown in a few years, or if it's impossible to buy the DVD at the year 50. So it might be a good idea, just go out and buy the DVD today while you still can. Anyway, I enjoyed the movie Blazing Saddles, and I enjoyed bringing up prepping issues that came from that movie, Blazing Saddles. I've been talking for over 30 minutes straight, so I'm tired, and I think I need to go nowhere special, if you know what I mean. So I'll cut it off here. I hope you found today's podcast informative and entertaining. I hope you watch Blazing Saddles in a whole new way after listening to this podcast. But I hear the music playing. That means our time is up. Thank you for listening. God bless.
He rode a blazing saddle. He wore a shining star. His job to offer battle to bad men near and far. He conquered fear and he conquered hate. He turned dark night into day. He made his blazing saddle a torch to light the way.